everybody, welcome back to another episode of Extra Movie Butter Podcast. This is JTE. I will be your host for today because the one and only Moose is out of town. No, he's not out of town. He's just out of this podcast. He'll be back, though. I'm not sure exactly what happened. He might have saw the movie and lost all faith in cinema. That could be the case, but we'll find out when he comes back next week. We'll ask if he actually went and saw this movie or not. So today our main review is going to be Expendables 4. The fourth film in the entry of the Expendables franchise, which was, this is the biggest gap between films because the first film came out like 2006, 7 maybe, and the last one came out 10 years ago. I can't believe it's been 10 years since Expendables 3. I feel like that was 4 or 5 years ago. Time is going by way too fast. But we're going to get really into that movie. I mean, let's be honest, it's not a very deep film, but I definitely have some things I definitely want to say about it. And I can't wait to hear Benny's thoughts, too. Benny, welcome back to the show. It's just you and me today, buddy.
That's all right. All the star power is here, but, you know, maybe Moose won't be here to contain the chaos, but we'll survive, hopefully.
We will survive. Moose, Moose with rabies, sometimes he just comes in and you don't know what he's going to do. But for the most part, he is the Captain Ron of our ship. Keeps it going. He might only have one eye at where we're going at sometimes, but he always keeps it on track. So he's not here to do the box office, but I asked you to pull up the box office numbers. Read them off to me, and then we'll just go over what happened to this dismal, horrible, low-ranking weekend. It was one of the worst weekends, I think, in Hollywood in a long time.
Yes, it was a pretty brutal week at the box office. Coming in first place at $8.5 million. Was The Nun 2. The Expendables came in at $8 million even. A Haunting at Venice came in at $6 million. The Equalizer 3 still hanging around, only had a 30% drop with almost $5 million, $4.75 million. Barbie, people are still going to see it for some reason, at $3 million. And My Big Fat Greek Wedding at $3 million and some change comes in right after us. A new indie horror movie, It Lives Inside, it scored $2.5 million. So good for it. And that's only in 1,300 screens. So that's a solid debut for it.
Yeah.
Some Money opened with $2.4 million. Blue Beetle still hanging around. Didn't even realize it was still in theaters, but it is. Made almost $2 million. And Oppenheimer rounds out the top 10, still making $1.5 million, proving that no one can stop a Cillian Murphy-led vehicle.
So let's just start off here. I think everybody expected Expendables to be number one. It has been diminishing returns. I think part three opened with $15 million, around there. So this is half of that. But I think it's, you know, I'm not going to get into the review too much here, but part three, you brought in Antonio Banderas. You brought in Harrison Ford. You brought in Mel Gibson, Wesley Snipes. You brought in some legends. Who did they bring in for this film? 50 Cent and Megan Fox. And there's a third new person who's an Asian girl. I don't know who she is. I never heard of her. She's good in it. She's actually okay in the movie. But I don't understand what they were thinking when they put this movie together. To me, it just screams cash grab. And if you know this from the trailers, maybe you don't, but I knew this going in because I'm a huge Stallone fan. Stallone is not throughout this film. It is basically – it's more than a cameo. It's like he's there to set the table, and then everyone else knocks everything down.
If anyone has ever seen the – I think it's Executive Decision where Steven Seagal is like the lead in the movie. It's a very similar kind of Steven Seagal thing with that movie.
I love Executive Decision. Great film. So to me, I just feel like from the – just on paper, I don't feel like they put really any energy or heart into this fourth film. And I think you're not going to get people rushing the theaters to see Megan Fox or 50 Cent. Neither of them have really been able to carry a movie. The whole premise of The Expendables is grabbing these aging 80s – 90s action stars and putting them from one last ride. Nobody was asking for Megan Fox. I don't know if she's ever been – I mean, she was in Transformers, but she's just running around the whole time. She's not doing any of the action. And 50 Cent has been in a lot of straight-to-DVD movies with Bruce Willis and random people. But his best film in cinemas is probably Get Rich or Die Trying, which is his autobiography directed by Curtis Hanson. That's a pretty decent movie, but it's not an action movie. I never think of 50 Cent as an action star. He's been shot 9 times in real life. So I guess that gives him some, some, you know, street cred. And, you know, he's probably the only guy out of this in this movie who's actually been shot in real life. So I guess give him some credit. But I just don't understand, like, what they were thinking when they were putting this movie together. I mean, they have Andy Garcia in this movie, which is – I don't think of Andy Garcia as an action star. I mean, he's famous.
He is a star.
Sure. I mean, he was in, like, the 90s and, you know, like – yeah, basically just the 90s. He had a good run there. I just don't understand what they were thinking. Like, they took – the premise of The Expendables is nowhere to be seen in this movie. It is still an action film. But how are you going to get butts in seats and people excited when Stallone's not even in the whole movie? You didn't bring back Arnold. We know the situation with Bruce Willis, so he knew he wasn't going to come back. But where's Wesley Snipes? You know, the only really two guys returning are Dolph Lundgren and Randy Couture. Listen, I love that Dolph Lundgren's in all these movies. He's great. But Randy Couture was somebody that was just kind of added in. He's a UFC fighter, and he's fine in the movies. At least bring back Terry Crews, the guy with the super shotgun. At least bring him back. I don't know. I just think I saw the trailer for this movie, and I was like, I remember getting excited for Expendables 3 because the fact that they had Harrison Ford, Wesley Snipes, Mel Gibson. I mean, they had real heavy hitters. And with this one, to bring in Megan Fox and 50 Cent, I just don't think the audience was – the audience that you're trying to play to wasn't going to be excited for this movie, which is why I think it came in second place and only brought in $8 million. Listen, I love Jason Statham, but he's not a guy who's going to, like, open a movie. And this really is, you know, Jason Statham's film in a lot of ways. Now, they did bring in Tony Jaa, and they did bring in Iko Uwusu. I can't pronounce his name, but the guy from the Raid films. Now, someone like me knows those guys because I love, you know, really hardcore foreign action films. But the regular person is not going to know who either of these two guys are. I mean, they've been in films like Mile 22, which was horrible. Tony Jaa was in Fast, I think, 6 or 7. I think it was 7, and he's cool in that movie.
That's not a bad movie.
Which one? Yeah, it's not good. This felt like a Paul Anderson film, by the way. Like, this felt like that kind of movie. Like, Paul Anderson made a really low-budget action movie. So anyway, I think that's the big thing. I think The Nun 2 carrying over was also, you know, not too surprising. You know, we are getting to spooky season. We're hitting October. And like you said, the film Talk to Me, is that what it's called? The Indian horror film? That had a really cool trailer and good reviews. So that's something I really do want to see.
It Lives Inside is the Indian.
It Lives Inside. Movie. Okay.
It Talk to Me was the other indie. Yes. Horror was there all summer.
Which, and both those movies kind of have a similar vibe from the trailers, in my opinion.
So here's what I think this year has taught us is that for whatever reason, people that grew up, and I would say me and you fall into this category that have a strong connection or nostalgia to the 80s, most mm-hmm. of those people, since the pandemic, they're not going out to theaters. It's not that they're not consuming the movies, but they're not going out to theaters. So if you look back through this year, every movie that relied heavily on 80s nostalgia absolutely bombed at the box office. The Flash, which relied heavily on Michael Keaton, Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
The people from the generation before us, and for the most part, sadly enough, our generation, they're not going out to theaters. And this movie, which its main draw was 80s nostalgia, which is not working right now. And then they tried to young it up and bring in some like 90s nostalgia, but they didn't bring in any 90s nostalgia that the 90s kids were going to clamor for. It's like, you know, like Megan Fox, people will know her name and people know 50 Cent's name, but I don't think I've ever met anyone in my life like Megan Fox and 50 Cent are in a movie. Fuck it. We're canceling the plan, honey. We're going to the movies this weekend. Like,
when I hear those two actors, I think straight to home video, straight to DVD, you know, those garbage Redbox movies you would find would have like, you know, B-level, C-level stars. What's the last time Megan Fox was in a theatrical film? I can't even tell you.
Yeah, like not outside of Transformers, the only thing I can think of is Jennifer's Body, and that was 15 years ago, something like
exactly.
that.
Yeah, so we'll get to more of that when we do the review, because I have a lot more to say about Megan Fox and all those other guys. But the box office, one of the lowest weekends. I think it will recover this weekend. I think The Creator is going to open pretty big. And we've seen that horror films are really strong this year. And you have a franchise in Saw X. I would love to see that crossover. Just let Saw kill all the Fast and Furious members. I think it's going to be a rebound weekend. I hope Creator does well. I hope it doesn't do bad, because it is an original sci-fi film. It looks amazing. It's getting really good reviews. The early word on the street is it's pretty awesome. And again, because this is such a strong year for horror, and you're bringing back the original guy from Saw, I think, you know, a lot of people see him in the trailer and they're like, oh, okay, this is a real Saw movie. Because the last couple have been kind of pretty weak, in my opinion. Jigsaw was pretty bad. And I thought the Chris Rock one was pretty awful, to be honest with you.
I'm a little apprehensive about the box office the coming week. It'll definitely be better than this week. Mm-hmm. Like a YouTube video of me playing with my dog would make more money than this week did. But like, the Creator, you know, it's not tracking well. I hope it overperforms. Like, I'm really excited to see it. Even if it's not a good movie, I hope it overperforms, because then people will invest more money into like novel, you know, franchise movies. And I'm all about that. But the Saw franchise, I think I kind of got a feeling the Saw movie is going to open bigger than The Creator, which is sad.
No way. Really?
I think so. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, and I do. But I actually think this Saw movie is going to open a little lower, just because the last few have not been good. And like, let's say if you're just out looking to go to the movies, you know, because there's nothing better to do, like one of those kind of people. Like, there were, what, 11 movies in the Saw franchise? Unless you're
I think this is a Saw X Saw. I think this is number 10.
But it's not. But there was the Chris Rock one that
Does that one like not fit into the?
Yeah, so I think there's 11 movies, if not more, in the franchise.
So it's like a Hobbs and Shaw situation.
Yeah, like, I don't think anybody is. If you not have already been on the Saw bandwagon, you're not going to put in 10 movies worth of research to go out and watch that this week.
True.
So I don't have a lot of optimism for the box office next week, but man, I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, I'm hoping even if Creator doesn't open as strong as maybe we're hoping it will, maybe word of mouth will give it longevity at the box office. Maybe people will be coming out this weekend telling their friends how great it is, posting on social media. That does happen sometimes. So even if it doesn't open strong, I hope it at least has legs at the box office. I haven't seen it yet. I'll be seeing it Saturday in IMAX. I'm really excited. I'm a big fan of Gareth Edwards. I really love Rogue One. It's one of my favorite Star Wars films.
I think it's the best Star Wars movie.
I think you could make that argument. I totally agree with you. And I was a big fan of the Godzilla film he made. And it's so weird watching that first Godzilla film, then watching King of All Monsters and Godzilla vs. Kong, because those are basically cartoons. Yeah. Whereas that first Gareth Edwards film is very dark, very serious. Like, it has an atmosphere of dread throughout the whole thing. He takes it dead serious, and I really like that approach. And I still enjoy the other films, but they definitely have gone more of like a Saturday cartoon. I mean, Godzilla vs. Kong is ridiculous. Like, the characters are so thin. They're basically just caricatures. And it's just wear over the top popcorn candy kind of movie. Whereas that first Gareth Edwards Godzilla is pretty awesome and pretty dark and pretty brooding. So I think Gareth Edwards, you know, he took a long time before making The Creator. I think, you know, it's no big secret. He had some issues with Rogue One, and Tony Gilroy had to come in and do some additional shooting. But I still think that's his movie. And you watch The Creator trailers, and it looks a little bit like Rogue One at times. And you're like, okay, yeah, this guy really does have a great visual flair.
Yeah, I am excited to see what he can do with a sci-fi movie that isn't, you know, where, you know, at least 25% of it, let's just put like a random number on it, it's someone else coming in and tinkering with what he did, when everything in it that I like. So I'm really curious to see him with no handcuffs in the sci-fi genre, what we're going to get, because I think it's going to be good. I just have a feeling it's going to be good.
Yeah, I'm really excited for it. So yeah, not much else to say really about the box office. It's a pretty weak weekend. I don't think people are expecting Expendables to open up at like 50 million. I think everyone knew this was going to be a pretty small weekend. Just it was smaller than even I thought it was going to be. All right, well, let's move on to some news. First of all, the strike is now officially over for the Writers Guild. I just saw on Twitter before we started recording this, like, this looks like the writers cleaned up. Like, they basically, looks like they got everything they wanted and then some. Nice. So, huge win for the writers. I'm just glad it's over. I'm really looking forward to, you know, the actors, you know, figuring out the SAG, figuring out their thing. Here's the thing. I want movies. I love movies. We do this show because we love movies. And after COVID, it was a really hard time for, like, a film geek because you were just given really nothing to watch. It was just scraps. And then it took about a year and a half for it to finally get back to where it's supposed to be. This is one of the – I think this was the first summer since COVID where it felt like the old school summer blockbusters. Like, there was a big movie coming out every other week, if not every week. And then with this strike happening, I'm worried. Now, they did do some shuffling, like movies like Ghostbusters – the new Ghostbusters film was supposed to come out this fall. That got pushed to next year. Dune 2 got pushed to next year. So Dune 2. I wasn't a big fan of the first Dune either, so we're on the same page on that one. So I do think, you know, I'm glad this is – they figured it out. I'm glad the writers got a more than fair deal. It really looks like they won this strike. They held out for 140-plus days, and it looks like they're going to be rewarded for it. And hopefully this saves our, you know, movie season for next year. Again, the actors still have to get there. But now with the writers, it feels like the first stone has fallen. Yeah. And now everything else will fall into place.
Yeah, I think the SAG strike will be much shorter because they'll have this as a template to point to with the studios for a lot of these issues. Mm-hmm. And it'll give them a baseline. So I think that all these strikes will be resolved in the next 3 weeks. It's just my hunch.
100%. So, not a lot of movie news this week. There was a new trailer for a new Nicolas Cage A24 film. What's that movie called again, Betty? Do you remember?
Was it In All Seriousness?
Something Dream. Dream Scenario.
Dream Scenario.
Yeah, so it's a movie about Nicolas Cage. And let me tell you, when Nicolas Cage has a new movie coming out, it's kind of a coin flip. It's either going to be like a garbage, you know, he took a paycheck movie, or it's going to be something like Pig or Unbearable Talent, where it's like, oh, this looks really good. It looks like he's actually really trying with this movie. And because it is A24, you know it's going to be, you know, kind of out there, a little bit odd. I thought the trailer looked promising. I thought, you know, I like the premise of a guy who just randomly starts showing up in dreams. It kind of feels like a Charlie Kaufman kind of film almost in some ways, or Michelle Grangi. Like, it just looks like it has that kind of tone, like absurdity and humor and A24-ness to it. So I think it looks promising, but it wasn't something where I saw the trailer and was like, oh my God, I can't even see that. And I loved the film Pig that he did 2 years ago. I thought that it was my favorite film of the year. The year it came out, I thought he gave an amazing performance. He should have been nominated for an Oscar. So Nicolas Cage, like I said, he's a coin flip. He's either going to be an amazing movie or a movie that looks like it should never go to theaters.
Generally speaking, I'm not a big fan of A24 fare. Like, if other people enjoy them, I'm really glad you enjoy them. But I like my strange with a bit of merriment. And I like my somber with less weird than A24 offers. And so the first minute of this, I think it's like a minute and 20 seconds, this trailer. The first minute of it, I was like, oh, this seems like it'll be a fun movie. And then you see the A24-ness just start washing over it like a tidal wave. Mm-hmm. And then the last 20 seconds, I'm like, oh, I'm out.
And yeah, I get what you're saying, but I will say, like, I like the premise of, like, a random guy who's a teacher just starts showing up in people's dreams, and they're trying to, you know, like, why is he showing up in these people's dreams? Like, and he's not, like, trying to kill them, or he's not Freddy Krueger. He's just there, and it's just weird. It's like, why is he there? He's just, like, in the background waving. I think it's a cool premise. I just need to see what they do with it.
Yeah, it's a great premise, but, like, you'll get like 20 good minutes and then you'll get some weird allegory on masturbation. I feel like that's what all A24 movies are. And that's firmly what I expect to get with this.
Yeah. I mean, did you see the film Pig that he did?
I did see Pig, and I did enjoy Pig. I didn't enjoy it as much as the rest of the universe did. But I mean, it's a solid movie. But again, I thought it was too somber, like because it had just like a monotone emotional note to it. Like some of the emotional things didn't really hit for me because there was no other emotional notes other than somber, I guess you would say.
Interesting. I see what you're saying. Were you a fan of Everything Everywhere All at Once?
I did like it. Yeah.
Okay. So that's a pretty A24 movie.
See, I didn't think that was all that A24. I thought that was more mainstream than they typically do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they do occasionally have like a mainstream movie like Barely Lethal or something like that. So, I mean, so they occasionally will throw some, you know, they'll occasionally play one of the hits instead of, you know, a 2-hour theremin solo. Mm-hmm. And when they do play the hits, I tend to enjoy it, I guess.
Okay, totally understand that. So in some other movie news, this kind of fits where you and I are going to be talking about the show today. Arnold Schwarzenegger has signed on for a new film called Breakout, which the director says he promises will be a throwback to the Arnold action movies of old. He said there's very little comedy in it, and that it's going to be a 75-year-old Arnold Schwarzenegger kicking ass again. And I think some people, you know, he recently did that movie FUBAR on Netflix, which is a very much a comedic show. It has action, but none of the action really feels like he's ever in danger or he's really a badass. It's very much a comedic tone. This film Breakout, apparently he's in jail. His son gets framed in another country and gets sentenced to 25 years in prison. And Arnold's character has to break out of jail and get his way to this other country to break out his son. So it's a breakout movie and another breakout. He's breaking out of prison so he can go break out his son from another prison in another country, which reminds me a little bit of a Schwarzenegger film, Collateral, where his family's killed in a terrorist attack. So he goes to South America to like take out the terrorist. So I kind of like the idea of him going to another country, but first having to break out of the prison. And I think the director saying it's going to be a throwback to the hardcore R-rated action movies that Arnold did when he was in his prime. I think it sounds pretty interesting and promising. What do you think about this news?
That does sound fun. Like, but here's the thing with like Arnold at 75. He's in amazing shape for a 75-year-old, but I'm a little leery of seeing a remake of Commando with a 75-year-old guy as the lead. So like I'll go into it with an open mind, and you know, if they find a way to make him menacing, you know, like the Terminator Arnold menacing without going completely leaning into the, oh, he's a broken down old man, I'll be interested to see if they can find the balance. I hope they can.
Well, I think the interesting thing is that he's in prison, so he's not like a good guy, it sounds like, from the get-go. Mm-hmm. Like the fact that he has to break out of prison to go save his son, he might just be like a really bad dude. And like, even though he's old, he have the old man strength, number one. But, you know, he could just be super violent. I think it would be cool to see Arnold in a violent film again. I saw the film recently that he did with David Ayer, Sabotage. Did you ever see Sabotage?
I have not seen it.
Okay, it's one of the first films he made once he came back to acting. Mm-hmm. And it's a very hard R-rated action film. Where he's basically the leader of like an elite squad of not special forces, but like a task team in like narcotics. And basically him and his team in the beginning of the film they're kind of crooked cops because they literally break into a drug dealer and they steal some money. And so they're being investigated, but while they're being investigated, people start picking off his team one by one. And Arnold like is blowing dudes' faces away with shotguns. It's a very hard R-rated Arnold Schwarzenegger film, and I enjoy it for that purpose. But again, this was like 10 years ago, or maybe even longer. This might have been like 12 years ago. He's 75 now. I think they're gonna have to play a little bit into that because he's 75. But like I said, you know, as long as it has a hard edge to it and the direction, the atmosphere keeps it like R-rated, I think that could actually be really interesting.
I think like the template to use for like these really aged action stars is, even though they are not great movies, is like the Liam Neeson, the early Taken films.
Yeah.
You know, where they're still really violent and they're still really terrifying, but you can tell it's an older guy. And so I think that's kind of the model that a lot of these aging action stars should use.
Interesting. All right, guys, that's going to do it for part one of our podcast. We'll be back, and we're going to talk about some of our favorite 80s, 90s action movies. Something, if you decide you don't want to go see Expendables 4 because, I mean, let's be honest, you saw the trailer. We're going to give you some recommendations of movies you can watch at home, stream at home, that will hopefully fill that Expendables hole left in your heart. All right, guys, we'll be back in a few moments.
Some say that we are not alone in the universe. Others say intelligent life surrounds us. Paramount Pictures presents the true story of one man who just may know for sure.
They took him.
Fire in the Sky, based on the Travis Walton case, rated PG-13, starts Friday, March 12th at theaters everywhere.
Hour hand, minute hand, second hand, sweet. Time is of the essence, gotta pick it up a beat. Cause time is money and money is time. The one that does it faster is the one that we buy. High gear, full tilt, gotta get it done. Quick, 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 bite fast food, eat it on the run. Rush, job, turn around, speed is now the key. Tell them that you want it ASAP. Get it in an instant, punch and run. Out 5, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We live in an instant world, why not make an instant fortune? Play Fortune Instant Lottery, you could win a quick million.
Hey guys, welcome back. Thanks for listening to our sponsors there. All right, so since we're talking Expendables 4, and we're going to get to the review after this segment, we want to give you guys, maybe you can't afford to go see the cinema this weekend, or you just saw the trailer for Expendables 4 and said, yeah, 50 Cent and Megan Fox isn't going to drag me out of my house to see that fourth film. We're going to go ahead and give you some recommendations. Now, as you know, I consider myself an action aficionado. I've seen just about every action film from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Obviously, I've seen some of the 70s, but I think we're going to stick to like 80s and 90s here. Some movies that, you know, maybe aren't the most highest rated movies on Rotten Tomatoes, but movies that we enjoy because of that 80s and 90s cheese and because they bring something to the action genre. You know what, Benny? I'm going to go ahead and give you the start. Recommend us a good Expendables-type movie that these people can check out at home.
So I'm going to start with a movie that I've been trying to get JTE and Moose to watch for 2 months called The Blood of Heroes.
So, yes, I will say I've tried to watch this, but everywhere I go, it's only available in, you know, square 4x3. And I know it wasn't filmed that way. It was filmed in widescreen. And the quality has been horrible. The streaming channels I could find online illegally are just horrible quality. I might just have to go ahead and order the DVD to get the 16x9 widescreen.
I don't know if you're going to get it, even if you buy the DVD, man.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if you will.
All right, well, sell us, you know, you told me about the movie, but sell the audience. Why should they watch this?
So this movie has one of the most unique premises in action sci-fi, and it's a very low budget. So know this going in, that you are going to be watching a very low budget movie. But the acting in it is really good. Like, the lead is Rutger Hauer, and Delroy Lindo is in it. So you have like legit actors in there. Vincent D'Onofrio is in it. You have guys that can actually put forth a real, you know, Hollywood performance, even though it's a lower budget movie. So essentially, what the movie is about is long after humanity has faced an apocalypse. There's really only like 8 cities left, and they're all underground. Everything else is like a desert wasteland. But it's not an apocalypse movie. They don't tell you why. They don't go into it. This is just something that happened long ago in history. But their game is like a weird version of rugby. So they play it with these giant weapons. Like, their version of a power forward swings a spinning chain with a bar on it. You know,
sounds very rollerball.
Yeah, their defensemen carry giant jousting sticks wrapped in a chain, you know. The ball is a dog's skull, you know. So it is a very extreme game. Mm-hmm. And so Rutger Hauer is someone that was banished from the cities. I won't spoil it for you. But there's just like this game, which is like super violent, and it's really novel. So, like, if you were into sort of the later Mad Max movies, especially like Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome,
Thunderdome.
this movie fits very well into that like post-apocalyptic action genre. And like I said, it's low budget, know it going in, but like you will be entertained, and it's very novel. So I strongly encourage you to check it out, even though it's low quality. I don't think you're going to find a high def version of this thing.
It's funny what movies, you know, make get lost in time. This is a movie that feels like it's been lost in time. I don't think it ever made it to Blu-ray. It barely made it to DVD, it sounds like. So it might be hard to find, but it is streaming on certain sites.
Yeah, it was very, like, when the first went over to DVD, you could not get it on DVD. And then, like, right before they switched over to Blu-ray, it started coming out on, like, some of those cheap Walmart DVD collections where it's, like, five movies on one thing. And that's probably the highest quality you're going to find.
Well, you know, to stick with the news of Travis Kelce dating Taylor Swift and, you know, kind of bringing everybody into football these days, new fans of football, his jerseys are selling out because he's dating Taylor Swift, which is insane. And, you know, not all athletes can make the jump into cinema. Our boy Howie Long tried it. He was in Broken Arrow. He was a good little side character, and they said, let's give him his own movie. And he starred in a film called Firestorm, which was a 90s firefighter action movie like Die Hard, and it bombed at the box office. But one athlete who was able to make the jump and is successful, in my opinion, 80s action movie would be Brian Bosworth in Stone Cold. This is a hard R, machine guns, titties, in-your-face kind of movie. You know, the kind of movie where girls are nude for no reason other than to be nude. There's guys getting shot up with shotguns, machine guns, bazookas. It's just an insane movie that does have its tongue in cheek. The opening scene with Brian Bosworth in a grocery store is very similar to a scene that Stallone did in a movie called Cobra, which both these movies very much kind of give you the tone that you're going to get for the rest of the film. But I think Stone Cold is a really good, you know, there's no CGI, which I love. You watch this movie and there's a scene where a helicopter is driving down the street during the Capitol, towards the Capitol, and it's an actual freaking helicopter. And I think stuff like that is just what I miss in action films today, especially Expendables 4, which is green screen crazy. So I think Brian Bosworth has enough charisma. I apologize. The dog behind me is playing with a squeaky toy. He's a huge fan of Stone Cold. And this movie is just – it's the movie that your parents didn't want you to watch as a kid. But you would sneak it – you'd get up at like, you know, 1 a.m., run downstairs, turn on HBO, and keep the volume down super low so you could watch some really good R-rated movies. And that's the kind of movie that this is. It's ridiculous. It's overly violent. And Lance Hendrickson, yes, Bishop from Aliens, he plays a great scene-stealing villain. He is just nasty. This is a biker gang movie where a cop has to go undercover and join this biker gang where it's super violent. And I think it's a great film. It actually just got re-released on Blu-ray with a special edition. So I highly recommend checking it out. Have you seen this?
I have seen Stone Cold. And JT is right. Like the first, when he started talking, I was thinking about, okay, what am I going to say about this? And I was going to say, it is so much like Cobra. Like if you have seen the Stallone cheesemonger classic Cobra, Stone Cold is like its spiritual twin cousin. It's so silly, but it is really fun, and it is a very nostalgic throwback to like when you could have like a cheap action movie because all you really were doing was hiring a bunch of steroid jacked thugs and having them punch each other and shoot blanks at one another. Yes. And, you know, if you like those kind of movies, man, Stone Cold will not disappoint. And you may be a little leery because, like, of the star is Brian Bosworth is like
he's not bad.
Yeah, there have been far worse mainstream action stars than what Brian Bosworth put forth in this movie. So it's definitely worth a watch.
100% agree. All right, what's your next recommendation?
So this one, I don't know if this fully qualifies as an action movie. And quite frankly, I don't even know if you're going to be able to find it anywhere.
Great.
So, sorry.
Okay.
So in the late 80s, Pierce Brosnan, before he was James Bond, when he was still just kind of a TV guy, he did a made-for-HBO action movie called The Heist. And there have been a trillion movies called The Heist. So that's one hurdle to finding this movie. But it is one of the better heist movies that I've ever seen, still to this day. It's about a group of professional thieves who are trying to rob a racetrack that this guy owns that screwed him over. And if you like, it's like Ocean's 11, but slightly more serious. And so if you are able to track down the Pierce Brosnan movie that's just called Heist, one, it is a fun whodunit, because it's one of those things, until the movie is over, until you see the money spilled out, you never really know what happened, why it happened, how it happened. But it's also not one of those now you can see me things where, you know, you don't know what happened, and then it's just like, I invented the magic teleporter, and that's how I stole the money. Like, yeah. Every step makes perfect sense through the movie, but you don't connect all the steps until you see it at the end of the movie. And Pierce Brosnan has always been able to carry a movie. He carried a movie in the 80s, he carried a movie in the 90s. And so it's a low-budget heist movie that doesn't look low-budget, and it has a legit leading man, and it has a great heist vibe, and there are some decent shootouts and fights. But so if you're able to track down the made-for-HBO movie Heist, do it. It's worth your 2 hours.
Interesting. I'm at least going to check out the trailer for it. I'm going to see if there's YouTube has the trailer. I'm going to recommend a movie that I revisited for the first time this year in a long, long time, and that would be Invasion USA. Now, in the 80s, Cannon was the king of the B-action movie. And I think this might be their magnum opus. Starring Chuck Norris, a guy who lives in a swamp. And listen, there's no backstory for this guy. He's ex-Special Forces. He is literally just a killing machine. But the movie, the premise, I think is so outlandish and so overly violent. It's literally about terrorists coming from Cuba, and they land in Florida, and they just start killing everybody. And it's so – the body count is insane. There's a scene where, you know, the citizens don't know what's going on. They just arrived in Florida at night, and they decide to drive to just a neighborhood. And the main villain opens the car, takes a bazooka, and just randomly starts blowing up houses on the street. And there's families in these houses. And at one point, a little girl is, like, putting out Christmas lights. He sees her. She waves at him, then she runs in the house, and then he looks at his, you know, terrorist buddy, laughs, and then shoots a bazooka at the house, and it explodes, and the biggest explosion you've ever seen. So I was just like, oh my God, this guy is literally just killing people. And then the terrorists have this genius idea where they kill some cops, and then they dress up like cops themselves, and they start going around to people who are having, like, birthday parties outside, just having barbecues, and dressed as the cops, they start just shooting people. They're like just killing people. And the people think the cops are killing people. So now when the cops do try to come and help, yeah, they kill citizens. So when the real cops show up, the people are attacking the real cops because they think the cops are killing them also. At one point, they drive a tank like through a mall and just start killing people. Now, the body count is insane. The civilian casualties is insane. And then who comes in? Chuck Norris with double Uzis. And he's just here to take out all the terrorists. It is a movie that is offensive to the point that it's comical. Like, that's the only way I can say it. Like, people aren't just killed. They're blown up. They explode. There's, you know, instead of 3 bullets, there's 30 bullets. It's just excess. It's excess. But because even though it's so violent, it's done in such a ridiculous manner, I couldn't help but have fun with the movie. And you can watch a lot of these movies made by Cannon. They're on Tubi or Pluto. I watched Invasion USA on Tubi, so you can go watch this right now. Listen, have some friends over, get some drinks, order some pizza, maybe take some edibles, put this movie on with a group of friends, and just have a blast because it is so over the top that it's glorious. All right, I think we'll each do one more. Have you seen Invasion USA?
I have not seen it since I was a child.
Dude, revisit it.
So I got, since we're on the subject of like pure 80s movies that involve a swamp, I'm going to throw out one of the iconic low-budget 80s action movies.
I can't wait.
And you know it's an iconic low-budget 80s action movies when the unneeded sex scene has cutting crews, I just died in your arms tonight, playing over the top of it. Band of the Hand.
I've never heard of this movie.
Go ahead. Never heard of Band of the Hand?
This Band of the Hand?
Band of the Hand.
No, hit me. What's it about?
Okay. So there are these juvenile delinquents, you know, they're probably, I don't remember if they're juvenile delinquents or they're just young felons. But anyway, they have a chance to get redemption, to get their legal sentence reduced. But they essentially, what happens is they get dropped off on like this swamp desert island. And there's a special forces guy there that trains them as killing machines. And then they go back to Miami to take out drug dealers and thugs.
Wow. Now here's my question for you. Is it a hot, decently budgeted film or is it really, really low budget?
No, it's not super low budget. Like if you watched it, you would just think that this is a cheesy movie from the 80s. It's not like a out there with a camera, you know, thing. And the guy, and to this day, I would have to look it up. The guy that trains them looks exactly like Steven Seagal and acts just like him. So I'm curious if it's actually like Steven Seagal's first movie or if it's a completely different guy. But anyway, it is very much like one of the early low-budget Steven Seagal action movies, but with just a touch more 80s cheese thrown in. And so if you are looking for some pure 80s and you feel like, I've watched all the Lethal Weapons, I've watched all the other 80s action movies, here's one that won't disappoint and that will fill that itch.
Nice. Again, I'm going to have to check out the trailer at the very least. All right, so my last movie before we take a break, I'm going to say there's a film that came out in the 80s that I really enjoyed. It's called Best of the Best. Eric Roberts, Chris Penn, James Earl Jones went to theaters. It's a great sports movie, but it's like sports martial arts. Like it's about Team USA going to like the national champ, not even national, the worldwide championship, and they go up against South Korea, or was it North Korea? I'm not even sure.
It's South Korea.
It is South Korea. Okay, so they go up against South Korea in the Olympics. So it's a really good like sports movie. Has good martial arts, but that's not the movie I'm talking about. I'm talking about Best of the Best Part 2, the straight-to-DVD sequel that is actually a very entertaining action film where the main character, Eric Roberts, is back, and so is his name's like Sonny the Dragon something, the guy who played Tommy in the first film. Basically, Chris Penn's character also returns, and he joins an underground legal illegal fighting ring that is run by Wayne Newton. Wayne Newton is the main villain of this show. So they literally, one of the guys, I'm not going to tell you who goes down there. One of the actors from the first film goes to the underground fighting ring and is killed by this Arnold Schwarzenegger type looking fighter. Like they literally wanted Arnold Schwarzenegger for this movie and they couldn't get him. So they got like an Arnold Schwarzenegger lookalike. And then Eric Roberts and Tommy from the first movie go to investigate this casino and find out how their friend died. And then they realize that there's an underground illegal like battle to the death martial arts tournament. And that's all I'm going to tell you. But Wayne Newton chewing up the scenery as the villain in this movie. He's phenomenal. The fights are pretty good. It's a good martial arts movie. And like I said, the first film is a good sports film from the 80s. But this is a good, you know, it's kind of like Karate Kid 1 and 2. This time, death is on the table. Like, you might actually die. People do die. So, Best of the Best Part 2, I'm going to recommend you find it. Where is it? I have no idea. I'm sure it's streaming on one of these sites for free with commercials. But it is a movie that, you know, back in the day, you would get these straight to DVD sequels, straight to home video sequels. Some of them wouldn't be bad. Some of them would be pretty good. I think this is one of the better ones. Have you seen it?
I have seen Best of the Best too.
Opinion.
It is an okay straight to video action movie, but I will say this, that personally I would go out and watch Best of the Best one.
Yeah, no, you have to. You watch the first one first. You got to do that because it's a good movie. But I'm telling you, once you're done with part one, go into part two. Give it a shot. Wayne Newton chews up the scenery in that second movie.
Wayne Newton is generally a pleasant surprise in movies.
He's not bad. He's actually pretty good in it.
No, he's okay. Like in lots of like movies, as like little bit parts. I've always been surprised Wayne Newton was not in more movies, actually.
He was in Vegas Vacation.
Yeah, and he was good in that.
Yeah, and I will say there is a Best of Best Part 3, and I think there's even a Part 4, and I stopped after 2 because I just there were different movies by that point. But the second one does feel like a genuine sequel to the first film. Like, you got Chris Penn back, and you got – hold on. We got dog bark. Anyway. All right, I think he's saying we got to go to break, so I'm going to listen to him. All right, guys, we'll be back in a few minutes to talk Expendables 4. See you in a few minutes.
Why are so many people drinking Diet Coke and seeing Steve Martin and Daryl Hannah's new movie, Roxanne? It's as plain as the nose on your face.
Just for the fun of it. Just for the smile of it. Diet Coke. Just for the cool of it.
It's a movie so big.
It's bigger than Watergate. It's bigger than Oprah.
So exciting.
Hey, Scotty, can you get this machine to work?
I'm giving it an off chase, Scott, Captain.
So explosive. You need two eyes to see it. National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon 1.
Give it to me straight, is this it?
You'll be back on your feet in no time.
Rated PG-13. Starts Friday, February 5th at theaters everywhere.
All right, guys, we're back. We gave you our recommendations for movies that will, you know, hopefully fill the hole that was supposed to be filled by Expendables 4. I hope that doesn't sound dirty. We went over the news and some of our, you know, reactions to some stuff that's going on in Hollywood. But we are here for the main review. And we're going to talk Expendables 4, the fourth film in the Expendables franchise. This one directed by the guy who was a stunt coordinator. And I believe the last film he directed was actually the Jackie Chan film that he did with John Cena that was just on Netflix and it was in the top 10. It was an okay movie. I actually watched it one night, and I was like, it had some good Jackie Chan action. John Cena was fun. I can't remember the name of the movie. It's about an oil rig, and yeah, it's on Netflix. Go check it out. I can't remember the title. But he directed this film 10 years after Expendables 3, and when I saw the trailer for this movie, I was excited when I heard they were making it. Because I was like, I'm all down for another Expendables movie. I saw the first three in theaters. They're my jam. I grew up with these actors. I was so excited. Then I saw the trailer for part 4, and I was like, who are they adding? Megan Fox, 50 Cent, Andy Garcia. And then they brought two martial artists, you know, the guy from The Raid and Tony Jaa. So I was like, okay, those two are kind of cool, but I didn't grow up watching those guys. And I went and saw the movie this weekend. We're both going to give you our overall thoughts. And then we'll get into spoilers and talk about what this movie is and what it isn't. I'll say this. Is it a good movie? Absolutely not. Is it as good as the first three? Absolutely not. Is it horrible? Some people might say it is. But I didn't hate my time in the theater. It's the shortest probably of all the films. I'm watching it in the theater and I'm thinking to myself, the opening action scene is not very impressive. And then it goes quite a bit without any real action. But the last 45 minutes of this movie is pretty much all action. it kind of saved it a little bit for me. And I thought the location of where this action was taking place was kind of interesting. But it's not a good movie. It's the worst of the franchise. Stallone is not in the start of the film like he was in the past three. And I think that definitely hurt the film. Once he wasn't around, I wanted more of him. I missed the older members of the crew. Where's Jet Li? Where's Terry Crews? Where's some of these other guys? Antonio Banderas, who we kind of get in this movie, but I'll get into that in spoilers. And then Megan Fox, to me, and 50 Cent just brought nothing to the movie. They brought nothing. They subtracted from the movie. And these people are supposed to add to the movie, not subtract. So while I think it's, you know, the redheaded stepchild of this franchise, it did have some action sequences where I was like, okay, that wasn't shot too bad. A lot of shaky cam, a lot of CGI, a lot of horrible green screen. But I knew that going in because I saw the trailers for this movie. So my expectations were super low. And I can't admit I had a tiny bit of fun with the movie. And I thought some of the action was kind of cool. I do like that they went hard R on this one because they went PG-13 with Expendables 3. And I really felt like that hurt it. This one, even though it is CGI blood and CGI gore, just the fact that they were actually just straight up killing dudes and like decapitating fools made my Expendables heart a little bit happy. There's a little flutter there, here and there. So overall, you don't need to waste your money seeing this in theaters. Wait till it's streaming somewhere. Check it out when you got nothing else better to watch. And you'll see some decent action. Statham is still a good action star. And he does his best to try to carry this film. But it's not. This didn't feel like an Expendables movie. It felt like a Jason Statham bad action movie with cameos from the people that we want to see. So that's my overall thoughts. Benny, overall thoughts?
So we were talking about, like, at least I was talking about, and when we were doing our little second round there, about low-budget 80s action movies.
Yes.
If this movie was not part four in a franchise and was like, this is Doug's action movie, and, you know, it came on HBO in 1992, and a 13-year-old me was half asleep on the couch, like, I'm not going to find the remote. It's just going to let it play. I would have been happy with this movie, you know? There's a little bit of cheesy fun to be had, and, you know, a lot of people die. It's a very good early 90s cheesy action cable movie. Overall, it's a terrible movie.
Yeah.
They use the least inventive storyline in the history of mankind. There is not any plot twist or plot turns that you don't see coming from Denver to here.
There's one I did not see coming, but we'll talk about that in trailers.
And then
on not trailers, the spoilers.
And on top of that, I'm not someone that went to film school. I'm not somebody that usually harps on technical things. And I like low budget movies. I don't need a movie to be perfect or to look great. As long as the story is interesting and the acting is passable, I'm usually okay. The cinematography in this movie, especially in the fight sequences, is awful. It is terrible. Like, you have Tony Jaa, and I can't pronounce the gentleman's
name. Guy. Just say the right guy.
They are two of the best film martial artists on the planet Earth right now.
Agreed.
And you have Jason Statham, who makes a living doing action movies. And instead of just having these really awesome action scenes that could be memorable or inventive, they're like doing close-ups of people's forearms and utility belts for no random reason. You can't see what's happening. It takes away from what this movie could have been, even though I don't think it had a very high ceiling, but the ceiling it could have had was wasted just because the cinematography was so horrendous.
Yeah, the CGI is not good either. The CGI is, you know, just obviously CGI throughout this whole movie. The CGI budget on this was pretty bad. It's a little, you know, disappointing because this is directed by a guy who started off as a stunt coordinator. And then you look at movies like John Wick and, you know, Atomic Blonde, you know, two guys who were stunt coordinators and no, what they literally make it a mission of theirs to show all the action uncut, clean, wide angle lenses because they want to show what they can pull off. And this guy comes in and is just choppy cut, choppy camera, bad CGI. And it's just disappointing.
And was having a seizure while working with the camera. It was so bad.
Yeah, and like you said, these are very skilled guys that he's working with. You don't need to do these camera tricks. Statham has been – the Transporter movies, he has fights that are all wide shot, all one take. Like, he could do this stuff. And you got these guys from The Raid and, you know, Tony Jaa. You have the guys that know how to – the guys made The Raid movies are just, like, some of the best – hand-to-hand combat you'll see in any movie ever. And then it all comes down to the director, I guess, at the end of the day, though. And probably they didn't want to put the time and hours it took to probably film a really good fight scene.
And that's true. I would say that this, the movie, not good, but even the enjoyment like you could have had in it, it almost feels like you're cheated out of it. Because like Jason Statham and the young man from The Raid, that should be an iconic on-screen fight. And instead, yeah, it's like 13 seconds long and you can't see anything that's happening. So the enjoyment that you could have, I feel like the director and the cinematographer, they steal it from you.
Let's get into spoilers. We both kind of gave our overall thoughts because I have a lot to say about some of these spoilers. So let's – all right, so we're now in spoiler territory. If you have not seen Expendables 4 – do not continue. But if you don't plan on seeing Expendables 4 and don't mind us talking about some of the craziness that happens in this movie, please stick around. Let me say this. I'm a big Stallone fan. I was Team Stallone growing up. I was not Team Arnold. Don't get me wrong. Love Arnold. Love his movies. But I was a diehard Stallone fan. So when Stallone directed the first film, I love that first film. I love the last 30 minutes, man. It goes balls to the wall, action crazy. I love it. I thought the second film was actually probably the best of the series. Simon West, the guy who directed Con Air, directed the second one. You got Jean-Claude Van Damme. You got Chuck Norris. You got Arnold actually, you know, doing something. The shot with Bruce Arnold and Stallone in Expendables 2, oh, amazing. The third film was the biggest mixed bag because they were trying to introduce, like, a new team, a younger team, and they brought in Ronda Rousey. They brought in that one guy who's a boxer. They brought in one of the Twilight guys. Like, yeah. If it was them starting to get away from what the series was supposed to be, the old school guys. Now, eventually they did bring the old school guys in because you got Wesley Snipes, you got Harrison Ford, you got Mel Gibson. You got to see that Stallone versus Mel Gibson fight. You got to see Stallone against Jean-Claude Van Damme, something like growing up was just – you couldn't even fathom that happening in the real world. This movie opens with Stallone, and he looks like he doesn't even want to be there, man. He's like showing up for like 2 days of shooting. He's like in two scenes in the beginning. Every other scene in the beginning of this movie, he's in, just in the plane yelling from above, you know, trying to talk to Statham while he's down there in the guts of glory of everything, the action. So this is the one thing, and I'm curious to hear what you say. In the beginning of this film, their first mission, they're going off to steal some nukes, you know, usual. And Stallone's character is in a plane above them, you know, kind of giving them aerial support. And he gets shot down, and the plane takes a hit, and you're like, okay, he's okay. The plane's hurt, but he's still going to be okay. The plane gets hit again, and Stallone, Barney Ross, crashes the plane. And I'm like, he survived. I mean, he probably parachuted out or something. And then they show Statham go to the plane, and then he see a body, which looks like Barney Ross had been thrown into a shredder. It was so gruesome, so over-the-top graphic. I was like, oh, my God. Stallone must have gotten an argument with the producer of this movie and decided he didn't want to ever do another Expendables movie again. And they just killed him in the most gruesome way possible by actually showing his body. His body is a mangled mess of human flesh. I could not believe they had killed Stallone off, and I bought it. I thought he died. I said he never wants to make another Expendables movie. They want him to continue his franchise without him. This was his way to be like, you can't bring me back for Expendables 5 because I'm not going to film another movie. So I thought he died. Now he shows up at the end of this movie. And I'll be honest, I was happy. I was like, thank God they didn't kill him. I was like, Stallone never dies in a movie. Thank you for not killing him. My hero is back. So I'll be honest with you, Benny. They got me. I thought they killed him. I thought they killed Barney Ross. And I don't – and the reason I – again, I thought he died was because the movie was so bad that Stallone was like, I don't ever want to do another one of these. So please kill me, and I want you to make sure you show my dead body so you know that I'm not coming back. You did not buy it is what I'm getting.
No, I didn't. Like, as soon as it happened, like, my wife – went with me to this movie because she actually enjoys the Expendable movies. I was like, oh, they totally faked his death.
But what did you think that body was? That body was a mangled mess. I was wearing his clothes. Like, what did you think happened?
I thought he just intentionally faked his death, you know, and had like a body hidden in there. So my initial thought is I thought they were going to do something interesting and have Stallone fake his death and be the Ocelot villain. You know,
interesting.
I thought, yeah. So initially I was like, oh, like that's some hope, you know, Stallone's going to be the villain. And then at the end, he'll go up against his own team. So like,
wow.
So like in my head, I'm like, okay, that's the movie that I'm writing as I'm watching this. And I'm like, okay, that's a fun take. You don't really get to see a Stallone villain.
Stallone would never do that. He loves being a hero.
Yeah. Well, he should have done that because then like after 15 minutes ago, you're like, oh my God, Andy Garcia is the bad guy. So telegraphed. And then once, like 10 minutes after that, when I, you know, like Andy Garcia comes in and he says he's going to go with the team. As soon as he said that, I realized that Stone had just faked his death to drag out Andy Garcia. Like the movie, like the plot was completely revealed at that point. And I was like, oh my God, this is like the least imaginative way to go about this.
See, I brought the outside world complications into the movie because I know the producer and Stallone did not get along. I don't think he really wanted to do this movie, but he kind of did it as a favor. So in my head, just knowing some of the backstory, I was like, Stallone just wants to add to this franchise. He's just, I'm going to – and I was like, I was like, this is so disrespectful to kill him like this and then to show his body become a mangled mess because it didn't really make any sense for him to have another body there. Because they're all the Expendables are on the plane. Like, where was he going to get their extra body? And then it turns out, like, it was an innocent guy from the bar. This poor guy, all he did was take Stallone's ring in the beginning. So at the very beginning, Statham and Stallone go to a bar to get in a bar fight. And there's this one guy, he calls him Shrimp. And all the guy did was take Barney's ring and not get it back. Did that deserve to be killed? Like, what did that guy do to deserve to be the freaking dead body? Besides getting a fight in a bar.
He even won the ring fair and square from him. He just didn't want to sell it back.
I know. Stallone straight up murdered this dude. This guy was just he might have been a tough guy, maybe an asshole. But did he deserve? This wasn't like some criminal he got out of death row. This poor guy did not deserve to be drugged, dragged onto a plane, and then killed and turned into mincemeat just for getting in a bar fight.
See, here's the thing that I guess the issue that I had with this as far as like spoilers go. Like if you had just abruptly killed Stallone off right there and he had just died, that's an interesting twist. Going into this movie, you don't expect to see Stallone just dead 15 minutes in.
No.
Or if Stallone had been the villain, you'd be like, oh, that's something we've not seen Stallone to do before. Both of those would have been reasonably interesting choices. Instead, you went with the least creative option that you had with what you did.
Well, it was interesting to me because I just couldn't believe I actually thought they killed him. And then they brought his burnt arm to the bar. And I was like, this is like – when they did that, I thought for sure they killed him because I was like, the fact they brought his burnt arm and put the ring on it and like put it up in the bar as like a trophy was very gruesome, disturbing. And again, it sold me on the fact that, yeah, Stallone's dead. That's his burnt arm up there, but they're going to celebrate him in this weird way. So, okay, so that's the beginning of the movie. Again, Stallone does come back at the very end. Again, he's in like a CGI helicopter. Stallone doesn't walk. At no point does he ever walk among the Expendables except for in the very beginning. And like I said, everything after he dies is shot basically him in a green screen on a helicopter. Or it's shot at the bar. Like Stallone probably did like a week of shooting on this whole movie. He's not in the movie. And Stallone was the star of those first three films. I guess you say this was a passing of torch to Statham, because this really is Statham's film. But then you get – they give you would think Statham would take over the Expendables, right? But they said that he couldn't take over the Expendables because he apparently tried to save Barney and didn't, you know, follow orders. So who gets put in charge of the Expendables? The team of the grisly 80s action stars, the baddest of the bad mofos. They put Megan Fox as the leader of the Expendables. And I'm like, what is going on in this movie? How does she have the rank, the skill, the... Yes, she's dating Statham, I get that. But still, she wasn't in any of the other movies. How is she the leader of the Expendables? I thought that was ridiculous.
They figured if she could kill Megatron single-handedly, she could take out Andy Garcia.
Man, I just couldn't believe they made Megan Fox the leader of the Expendables. Again, Megan Fox has like no action skills in this movie. Like all she does is walk around with a gun, pointing it, and then she'll pop off a shot here and there. All right, well, listen.
Scarlett Johansson's Black Widow head.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, exactly. It was probably a stunt double. So the cool thing about – here's the one thing I will say about the movie. After Stallone died, I was shocked. I was upset like that she was taken over. I was like, where is everybody else? I do like seeing Dolph Lundgren. I think he's always good in these movies. I think he's a fun character. I actually liked Dolph Lundgren in this. 50 Cent was okay. He wasn't as bad as Megan Fox. At least he looks believable, like he could hold a machine gun or a shotgun. He looks fine. There was a scene where they play his music, which I thought was dumb. Like, why are you playing a 50 Cent song to distract these guys? That was so dumb. Now, the movie lost me for a while here because it kind of becomes a road movie. Jason Statham's trying to get to this boat that the Expendables are going to. He joins up with Tony Jaa on this little boat. The Expendables get kidnapped because they're double-crossed by Andy Garcia. We don't know that till later. But here's where the movie kind of came away to me a little bit, Benny. It kind of became under siege for about 45 minutes. I didn't realize the whole like last 45 minutes of the movie was all going to take place on a boat. But they did some interesting things on a boat. There's a really cool chasing with a machine gun motorcycle. There's some stuff with like, you know, the boat being turned on its side. You know, the team going on, just killing a bunch of people. There is a lot of action and violence in the last 40 minutes of this movie that, you know, didn't make – I was really down on the movie up until that point. And I was like, okay, you know what? At least you gave me the last 45 minutes of – even if it's not great shot action or great action overall, it was cool to see everything kind of happen on this one boat. It gave me some Under Siege vibes. Did you feel that way?
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, the setting for the action – and I think the action itself probably wasn't bad. It was just shot so poorly that it was hard to appreciate it. And one thing that they did, they wasted so much time on the Megan Fox, Jason Statham relationship.
Yeah.
Like, there's like a 10-minute, the most unrealistic sex scene of all time. And then there's 10 minutes of them just screaming at each other at their front door for no reason. And because that they did that, the villain that the guy from The Raid played gets really no character development.
He's just Tony, a bad guy.
Yeah, and Tony Jaa, you don't get to see why he decides to get on the boat. Like, the whole time he's like, I'm on this journey of peace. And he's like, oh, well, the pizza's not going to be for an hour. I guess I'll just hop up here and kill 20 dudes.
Once a killer, always a killer. So yeah, I agree. The action isn't shot well, but it's not. It's so over the top at times and ridiculous and violent. I did get some joy from the action. I like seeing dudes get stabbed in the throat, through the cheek, through the eye, shotgun to the face. Like, because it's done in such a tongue in cheek way, even though it wasn't shot great, I just enjoyed the mayhem of it at times. And I did like it being contained to this one boat because it did add some kind of like interesting, you know, situations for some of the guys to be in. The final fight between, you know, Statham and the guy from The Raid, it's not great, but it wasn't horrible. I think you said it was like 13 seconds of shake cam. Yeah, it is a lot of shake cam. It is pretty short, but I felt like, you know, these were two guys that really were kind of trying to kill each other. I thought Tony Jaa, you know, he just came in with his little hatchet. He was killing dudes left and right. I enjoyed seeing, you know, Dolph Lundgren sniping dudes at some point. All of it was just, again, because it was at least R-rated and not PG-13, and it was so over the top. And I think at times the bad CGI just added to some of the fun for me. It was like, this looks so bad, about actually having some fun with it. It's not high praise, but I got to be honest, like, I was somewhat entertained at the end.
Yeah, like I said, I wasn't like miserable watching the movie. It's not like one of those movies where you're sitting there like, oh, please let this end. It's not like a Dial of Destiny situation where I'm just actively rooting for the film to rip, you know?
Yeah.
So, but like, some of the action is so far-fetched. It's like everything with the motorcycle did not work for me. One, because really? I could see most of it. And two, it's just like, I'm over the Fast and Furious, you know, cars or magic killing machines. I'm done with that. I'm done with that in any movie for like 10 years. Like, no magic car assassinations from here on out. And like,
at least it was R-rated though. At least it was like a Fast and Furious movie, but R-rated.
Yeah, that's true. I guess, I mean, there's a silver lining in it that you saw somebody die, but it's the same thing as like, you can use an R rating to your advantage, or movie can just be R rated. Like, look at another Jason Statham movie, like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, you know, where the guy, he beats someone to death with a dildo, but it's like a very gruesome and violent scene, but that'll get you an R rating. But it's also an interesting scene, whereas this is just, you know, I'm on a magic motorcycle. I can kill everyone.
It's a cartoon. Let's just say this movie felt even more so than the other films, which also felt like cartoons. This felt like a cartoon because, for one, half the background was CGI, so it was mostly animated. And it just, you know, again, it's the worst of the series. They got me with the Stallone thing. I thought he died. I brought all the information I had outside the movie in the theater with me. I was like, oh my God, I killed him. I was like, he must be feuding with this producer and basically was like, make it so I never have to come back and do one of these movies. Because this is the sad part to me. Stallone, this was his baby. Like, the first film he wrote and directed. He's like, let's go back for, you know, one last ride with the old school action guys. And the second one felt like that. The first one had a very low budget, but Stallone did it, and then he pulled it off a good action movie. Over the top, R-rated. Then Simon West came in, and I think he took all the promise that first movie had and brought it to full recognition. Like, it was just Expendables 2 is the best in the series. And then the third one was them unfortunately being like, we need to bring in new talent, new fresh faces. Let's try to make the next generation of action heroes. And it failed completely. The only time Part 3 works is when they lean on Antonio Banderas and they lean on Wesley Snipes, Stallone, and Gibson. So, and Harrison Ford, honestly, in the third one's not that great. He's just in a helicopter doing quips. Looks like he's half asleep. This one felt like it wasn't Stallone's thing. Like, this was not a Stallone-written film. This is not a Stallone-directed film or produced. Like, he literally is just showing up as, like, a favor, it feels like. And this, to me, this is more about Statham and the producers of the other Expendables movies just trying to squeeze the last drop of water out of the sponge that was the Expendables. And it just feels kind of lifeless.
I would thoroughly agree with that. I would say this is like kind of the same thing happened, you know, with the Creed franchise, and where it's something that Stallone has been shepherding forever, and then it kind of got pulled away from him. But like in the Creed franchise, you know, you had a really good filmmaker taking it over from him.
Yeah.
And you actually developed the characters, whereas this is, we're going to take it from him. We're going to use the name to try to make $30 million and then let the franchise die. Whereas with the Creed one, it's like, we're trying to build something. So I think you definitely see the level of emotional investment in him.
At no point do I think Stallone sat in office and said, we need to include Megan Fox and 50 Cent. I don't think he had one thing to do with those choices. Those are obviously the guys wanting – like, I don't even know where that came from. Who said 50 Cent? And I think the guy who produced this movie produces a lot of those straight-to-DVD films, and he just has a relationship with 50 Cent. He has a relationship with Megan Fox. They're like, let's throw him in our Expendables movie because we have him on contract or something. So it was completely lazy, uninspired.
If you were making the Expendables 4 – and you were trying to get people from the 90s and 2000s, who else do you bring in? Like, it's if you, instead of Megan Fox, 50 Cent, you're dream casting this, who do you bring in?
I'm not going to those people. I'm not bringing Ronda Rousey or something, you know, like they tried to do with the last film, or a boxer. Like, I'm not bringing these kind of people in. I'm going back and I'm looking at, you know, finally put Seagal in there for a small role. Go grab some, you know, other 80s or 90s action stars. Listen, there's not a lot left after the first three. They really kind of filled it out. But there's some people out there they could have brought in. Bring Jet Li back. You know what I mean? Bring Mr. T. I'd give Mr. T cameo in this movie before I gave Megan Fox or 50 Cent.
I would have kept all of their money and just sprang for Jackie Chan.
There you go. Bring Brian Bondsworth in here.
Why not?
Stone Cold in there, man. Just, you know, at least, you know, let Stallone and the Terry Crews. I don't know. I think he had an argument with the producer. I think they felt had a falling out. But even he was missed. I just think there's other guys you could have got. I don't know how you got to 50 Cent and Megan Fox. It doesn't fit the series at all. At least Ronda Rousey was a badass UFC fighter. It was knocking, you know, girls out left and right on pay-per-view every week. She's a badass. Megan Fox is not a badass. 50 Cent's a good rapper, but he's not a badass action star. I don't get it. Andy Garcia's not an action star.
I'll tell you this. I would take Megan Fox and 50 Cent over Andy Garcia's performance in this movie.
I thought he was fine.
No, he was not fine, man.
I disagree. I thought he was fine. He knew what kind of movie he was in. He's not bringing his Godfather 3 performance in here. He is literally just here to be a bad guy and say some words. It's a paycheck.
He literally looked like somebody that was reading a teleprompter, doing a toothpaste commercial through most of the.
You thought Megan Fox was worse than him, better than him?
In this movie, yes. Like, in general, no, not in any way. But in this movie, Megan Fox tried harder than he tried.
I can't agree with that. I'll have to watch it again.
Yeah, I'll tell you this, like, if you look at any of Megan Fox's performances, right, like Transformers or things like that, mm-hmm. she brings the same energy, the same level in those movies. Like, she's not a talented actress. She is what she is, but she is on the level with her other big movies. Whereas Andy Garcia
looks I'll like disagree.
Swallow pills than be in this movie.
Here's why I disagree with you, because she was just the hot girlfriend in those movies. And I think she could play that role no problem. What I can't do is have her be the leader of the Expendables and be a badass. I don't buy her that at all, but I could buy her in Transformers.
See, that's not her fault, though. They're the ones that put her in that role. She lived up to what she can do.
Yeah. I blame the producers. I blame the director and the casting. I'm not blaming her. Yeah. Take that money, get the paycheck. But she was the wrong choice to be in this movie.
That is true. But Andy Garcia could have played that role. He just chose to play it shittily. Megan Fox did what Megan Fox could do with her role.
What about Statham? I think Statham did what he was supposed to do. I thought for the most part, he Stathamed it up.
Yeah, he was fine. Like, this is the character that Jason Statham plays in 95% of his movies, and he didn't sell it out. He's exactly what Statham is in The Transporter or Crank or any of his other cheesy action movies. He was Jason Statham in that movie.
I did buy, like, I bought that he wanted to kill the guy that killed Barney. Like, he is on a revenge mission, and I do think he did a pretty good job of conveying, like, I'm going to kill this guy. I was like, hell yeah, Statham, go get him, because they killed Stallone.
Yeah,
at least I thought they did.
No, like, I thought he was fine. He's like, Jason Statham is a fine, low budget leading action man, you know? Like, Jason Statham is not going to win an Oscar, but he is fine at what he does. Like, outside of the Guy Ritchie movies, I don't think he can bring a lot dramatically, but he can carry an action movie. Like, yeah, I'm going to kill someone. I bought that. That's what Jason Statham does.
All right, guys, well, that's going to do it for our review of Expendables. We'll just quick give our last word. I think you kind of know how we feel about it. I'll just say I thought it's, you know, the worst of the four. I feel like this was out of Stallone's hands. This is no longer his baby. This is more of a product than a sequel to the original Expendables films. But that being said, while the movie, the first half an hour, 45 minutes, I thought was pretty bad and dragged on, didn't have as much action as I was like. I did think the set piece on the boat for where you spend basically the last 45 minutes of the movie, at times was pretty entertaining and pretty action-packed, so I did at least get my fill of cheesy action that I wanted from an Expendables movie, even though it's not up to par with the previous film. So check it out when it comes streaming. Don't waste your money unless you have A-list and you have nothing else going on and you really do love these films, you do love just any action movie, then I'd probably say go check it out. What do you say, Benny?
Yeah, if you were really bored and it's streaming, it's fine to put on as background. You don't really have to pay a lot of attention to it. If you're actually wanting to engage in an action movie, go watch one of the raids. Go watch Onbach. You know, there are guys, and Jason Statham has movies in here too. There, everyone in this movie, outside of Megan Fox and 50 Cent, has other movies that you should watch instead of this movie.
That is a great point. Yes, yeah, very much.
So what I would do is I would look at the cast list of this movie and then, you know, Wikipedia, those filmographies, and go watch those movies.
100%. All right, guys, let's get into this episode of Extra Movie Butter. Next week, we'll be back. Moose will be back. And maybe we'll get a guest. I'm going to reach out to a few people soon because I think this is going to be a pretty big movie. At least me and Benny are hoping it's going to be a pretty big movie. We're going to be talking to the creator, the new sci-fi action film about AI. It looks like just a big old-fashioned sci-fi epic in a lot of ways. It's directed by Gareth Edwards. I almost said Evans because we were talking about the raid so much. Gareth Edwards, his return since Rogue One. Director who I'm, you know, been a pretty big fan of his first two films. So I'm excited for the creator. Ben, you're excited for it, right?
I am excited for it, yeah. Like, I got a good feeling about this movie. I think it's going to be a winner.
I love it. All right, guys. So thanks so much for tuning in. We will see you guys next week with the creator. And remember, keep watching those movies.